Gedula chemincha tzatim serura. Aleph bet gimel yud taf tzadi. This connects us to unconditional love through its gematria of 506. Kabel rinat amcha sagvenu taharenu nora. Kufrei Shayan Sintet Nun. Cross Satan, tear up Satan. And the letters can be rearranged to remind us about the small gates, the gates that we need to guard from the negative system, the eyes, ears, nose, and mouth. Na gibor dor sheyud chal kevavat shamrem. Nun gimel dalet yud kaf shin. Bar chen tacharem rachamei sitkatcha tamid gamlem. Betet resh sadi taf gimel. Chasin kadosh berov tu Ka na'el adatach. Het kuf bet, tet nunayim. Yachid ge'er lamcha p'nei zokrei kedushatach. Yud gimel lamed pei zayim kuf. Shavatenu kabel ushma tziratenu yodea talumot. Shin kufav tzadi yud taf. The letter taf that created the planet Lavana, the planet of the moon, and the chet that created the constellation Sartan, the crab, also known as the Cancer, and also the Hebrew month of Tammuz. And we utilize these letters to enhance the positive aspects of the month of Tammuz and the sign of Sartan, and limit the negative aspects. And the eighth verse we say in a whisper. I'm reading from the Parsha of Balak, section 14, verse 186. Vayehi Noam Adonai Eloheinu aleinu maasei yadeinu kuranei aleinu maasei yadeinu kuraneihu. Ve'ata lecha na'ara li et ha'am hazeh v'gomer. Rabbi Abba patach Tufila le ani ki yatov begomer telat inun diktiv behu tufila veok muha milada had hava Moshe vehad hava David vehad ani dihit kalil behu veyat chabar behu veitema. Ha ketiv tefila lehabakuk. Ha navi ha arba inun ela habakuk lav begin. Tefila hava via agi diktiv be tefila tushbachta. Behoda ihu lekudsha barichu al haachaya. Leil v'yavad, imena sayon ugvuran Dehabaraya Dishunamit Hava. Come now, therefore, I pray you, curse me this people. Rabbi Abba opened the discussion with the verse, a prayer of the afflicted, when he faints. There are three for whom the expression prayer is written, and this subject was already explained. One is Moses, one is David, and one is the poor man that was included with them and was therefore with them and was together with them. You may say that we also find it written a prayer of the prophet Habakkuk for a total of four. He responds, that of Habakkuk is not said for the reason of prayer. Even though the word prayer is written about it, it is rather praise and thanks for the Holy One, blessed be He, for having revived him and performed with him miracles and mighty deeds, since he was the son of Shunammite, whom Elisha brought back to life. I wondered where that information came from and how they tied it together, and I see it here. In the Zohar, this verse is talking about Habakkuk. And Habakkuk is a prophet. He's one of the prophets that's written in the book of prophets. But he's actually the son, the boy, that was resurrected. And just as Eliyahu is a person who is extremely male, Habakkuk is a person that is extremely female. And that's why he was so, the possibility of why he died young and why he was resurrected, all of those aspects relate to him and to his prophecies. And this verse is now talking about how it also, we need to understand that even though it's saying tefillah, saying prayer in that verse, when it says a prayer of Habakkuk, it's not talking about prayer. It's talking about praise. Does anybody have any questions? Because it's been a few weeks since we've had a class, so. No questions? Marcia, are you seeing me clearly? Because we're getting a green vibration across your screen.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. I see a lot of green interference lines on mine and not on yours. So you're seeing the same thing?
Yes, that's what I'm seeing. So it's an indication that your media, your bandwidth is limited. That's the kind of thing it's saying. Mm-hmm. I don't know, are you hooked into it by hardwire, or are you using a Wi-Fi?
Well, I just have what I've always had in my house.
Right.
So it's a wireless connection.
Well, it could be. Anyway, it's related to the bandwidth that you're using, so.
I don't know what to do about it.
Nothing you can do. Just, we'll put up with it. I just wanted to verify it. Is there any subject you guys want to talk about?
I'm interested in really understanding this whole concept of sharing. Because the whole concept that sharing has to be uncomfortable, outside your comfort zone, you know, growing into something new. And I was just wondering if you could give us an example of how you've done that, you know, shared, that's true sharing and not just what's in your comfort zone, which is anywhere to be dealt. You know, my question, you, of course you do. I'm having a hard time doing that.
No, you're having a hard time evaluating what you're doing.
Okay.
The
all of the lectures in the Kabbalah Center and all my teachers training, it seems almost impossible to share without getting anything in return.
And that's very true. Because we are always a desire to receive. And if we are ever doing something altruistically, it's a lie. We're lying to ourselves. Now, the B'nai Baruch group uses altruism. They use the term altruism to describe the sharing. So it's confusing because I use altruism in a different context, in its more direct meaning. But I do. There is something called giving, and there is something called sharing. There is something called going out of your comfort zone. There is something called being aware of the other person, feeling the pain of the other person. These are all code words for levels of consciousness. Remember, we are playing out a movie. So what action are you doing? You asked me to put it on a personal level of how do I share? I share the knowledge of Kabbalah. I share because I've chosen a lifestyle of traveling from city to city, which is not easy. I'm getting married, and my wife has accepted following that path of travel. It's not easy for her. It's even more difficult for the two of us to travel together. We're taking it day by day, step by step, and determining that. But what is the consciousness that I have when I travel from city to city? What is that consciousness? Is it sharing? Is it giving? Is it out of my comfort zone? Number one, it is extremely difficult to get out of your comfort zone. And once you've expanded your consciousness to get out of your comfort zone, you now have a new comfort zone. So there is always more to expand. There's always more to share.
Yeah.
Where are you today, at this moment? What is your consciousness? If you are thinking about yourself, or are you thinking about what is best for the other person? The metaphor that I use when we talk about restriction and the process of restriction, the metaphor of the scale of 100% sharing and 0% receiving for oneself alone, and going through the scale and I say you will never get to 100% sharing, because once, when we live in this frame of reference called the tree of knowledge, good and evil, once we entered that frame of reference after the sin of Adam and Eve, we can never be without selfishness. But we can transform desire to receive for oneself alone into desire to receive in order to share. But ultimately, we always are a desire to receive. Now, let's use as an example, and I am not really familiar with her, but as an example, many people talk about Mother Teresa, how she went out of into the slums of India, and totally dedicated her life to the poor, and was not looking to receive anything back. Yet she received things back. She received honor. She received a lot of money donations. People did address her. Where did that come from? It came from her desire to receive, or it wouldn't have happened. It wouldn't have been in the movie. So what you're coming from is that aspect of the Scorpio of judgment. You're being harsh on yourself. What is a desire to receive? Literally take a look at your momentary consciousness, because you change. From one moment to the next, you change. What is your consciousness? You get a thought. You got a thought to open up your home to me when I was in Phoenix. But you also brought that thought down and had the logic of, well, but I'm going to benefit from that. Now, you could have stopped the thought and said, all right, this other thought about benefiting from having me in your home, let me take a look at that. Let me see how I can transform that. Well, I'm going to benefit by having Hanukkah in my home, but I'm also going to utilize that knowledge that I gained from him in order to share with other people, in order to expand and reach out to other people. That's a consciousness. Whether you do it or not, you've changed the consciousness. And what happens is you've elevated out of that movie you were in to a different movie. You can't look at things from the standpoint of what am I thinking? Or actually, you have to look at it from the standpoint of what am I thinking? What is my consciousness right now? And you have to go through and really learn, why did your higher self put you into that situation, gave you that thought, caused you to be in the situation of people and circumstances where you get that situation? I was in a place, I'm going to give you another example of where I was sharing and the consequences of it. I was in one of the earlier classes when I first started to study Kabbalah, and you know Ruthie Rosenberg, or have heard speak. She was my teacher at the time. And she made an announcement that there was a book in Spanish that the center was looking to receive donations from in order to publish. And she mentioned an amount that needed to be donated. And the thought that I had at that instant sitting in that class is, I'll do it. But I didn't think through what is my consciousness and why am I doing it. I'm just sharing. That was my understanding very early in my process of learning sharing and restriction. Ultimately, the higher level is receiving in order to share, not sharing. But the Kabbalah Center and all other teachers of Kabbalah don't walk you through that process. They don't explain that. Sometimes on Shabbat afternoons, Michael would speak about it, but almost nobody understood what he was speaking to. Because it's so easy to talk about sharing. We can evaluate sharing by looking at our actions and just going through the motions. But ultimately, we have to recognize that we are a desire to receive. And if we are doing anything, we are doing it to receive something. And to say that we're not is a lie. Now, we're receiving in order to share, that's a different concept. That's a central column concept. It has receiving and it has sharing in balance. A few days later, after Ruthie made that announcement, one of the teachers came by and I raised the subject and they said yes. And I wrote out a series of checks to be able to make that commitment so the book could be published. There was no restriction in my action. There was just desire to receive for myself alone. I wanted the honor. I wanted the benefit. The center in all of the teachers and that Shabbat I received in Aliyah, all for doing this action. But the consciousness, my true consciousness, was not one of sharing. It was one of receiving for myself alone. Now, it was out of my comfort zone. The amount of money was the greatest amount I'd ever given. Not only the greatest amount I'd ever given, but the greatest amount I'd ever given by a factor of 10. And I couldn't afford it. I was taking money from my sister, who I supported. I thought I could do both. And I proceeded to pay those payments until they were complete. But I still hadn't learned the lesson, and during that process, before those payments were completed, I made another large donation. That one I never completed. That one, when my sister and I became in conflict over the family business, and I handed her the keys, and she started going through the books and records, she got upset that I had written these checks. These huge checks to this organization that she wasn't involved with. And it deteriorated the relationship I had with my sister because she wasn't capable at that moment of understanding why I did it and understanding the values involved because she didn't understand Kabbalah. She had dropped out of the beginning class in the third week or fourth week, saying that that Kabbalah was chauvinistic, like all Judaism. And that's what she had heard. All of this was cause and effect. How I created the condition that created the separation of my sister from myself. Now, over the course of the next 5 years, we did heal the breach. And I was put in a situation, having handed my sister the keys, of being, eventually within a few months of that incident, being homeless. And really my agreement with her was to be paid sufficient for me to live for 6 months, after which time I would have felt that I'd gotten a job and be able to support myself. She cut off those funds. So I became homeless right away for a few months. And I was fortunate to have friends who would put me up on their couch or their floor. And I learned it was truly a gift. The whole process was that of a gift, to be able to see how the spiritual system works, cause and effect. So what is it about your valuing where you are that you feel you're not sharing, or that you're always looking at yourself or your desire to receive for oneself alone? It's always comparing yourself to where you were yesterday. Where were you a year ago? 3 years ago, would you have opened your house up to me? 3 years ago, would you be making tzedakah payments, tithing payments like you are today? You've come to grow into that level. what is it you're comparing yourself to? This highest level of knowing that you're always receiving for yourself, but transforming all of that consciousness into sharing. You can never get away from it. So why are you upset by it? I don't know that I've answered your question in a way that you're able to hear at this moment, but I hope I have.
I hear you. It's just a very different answer than I was getting from Esther. But it is in alignment with a lot of the things I've heard in Michael and Eton's and probably Ruthie's lectures too. You know, that it's more about consciousness. It is about action, but it is more about the consciousness. And when I was studying with Esther, it seemed to me it was a lot about the actions, and no matter what I did, it wasn't right. So there's some things to be worked out for me in that area. But I do see growth, and I do see where I, you know, just in looking at things that happened today, where my consciousness was in the right place initially, but then when things got very difficult, I wasn't able to maintain a unselfish consciousness. I had to just, you know, pull back with a particular client that was in crisis.
Welcome to a human race, to the human race.
Thank you.
I mean, that's really what you're saying. You're saying you couldn't hold on to it for whatever reason.
Yeah, I mean, I've reached the limit of my patience with this person. Yeah, basically after a certain period of time, which was probably a longer period of time than it ever would have been before, but, and I didn't even feel bad about it when I stopped being sympathetic and started getting a little more, you know, confrontational, I guess. Now I look back on it and I think maybe I could have done something else, but it would have had to have been in consciousness, because in action I think I did all I could do. But in consciousness, I don't know how to consider that later, what I might have done differently. Probably just holding on to the light, you know, the light pouring through me toward him without thinking about anything or considering a result would have been a good change. You know, I hear you as far as continuing to take our next step. But with Esther, it was more like, how do you give more? How do you get out of your comfort zone more? I mean, I was giving, it seemed like 20 hours a day, and that wasn't good enough for her. But I was running myself ragged, and that wasn't, I couldn't sustain that.
Exactly. But the question that you didn't interject into the process is, what is the best thing for her?
For the other person involved?
The other person. This is truly transforming your consciousness of the desire to receive for oneself alone into sharing. When your thought is, what is best for her, listen to the words that you use to describe. You were being run ragged. You were working on it. She was constantly asking you for things, and you were doing it, and you felt overwhelmed by it. All of those words in consciousness is talking about not sharing. You were doing actions of sharing, actually actions of giving. But your consciousness was never about what's best for that person. Now, there are times as a teacher to a student when you have to wake the student up. You have to raise your voice. Are you really upset? Are you really angry? Or are you raising your voice in exasperation because you've reached your limits? If you have the consciousness of what's best for the student, then you're just acting. You haven't reached your limits. But you know the person has to be woken up. What's best for them is to think that you're angry. And so you have to act angry. You have to act exasperated. But is that really your consciousness? You've injected the thought, what is the best thing I can do for this person? When my sister pulled away from me and started badmouthing me to my other sister and my family about how I was stealing money from them and so forth and so on, what was the best thing that I could do at that moment for them, for my sister? I wasn't concerned about my reputation. I wasn't concerned about the money, because I knew I'd eventually get the money back. I know the spiritual rules. If I have money at some point and then I lose it, it's guaranteed it will return to me. That is a given reality of the spiritual-physical relationship. So I was never concerned about losing the money, being homeless. I knew it would return. But what was the best thing for my sister? Was it to try and get her to understand me? Or to pull away from her and give her the space for her own growth? Which was the best action? Pulling away from her may have even been easier for me, although it wasn't really easy. But had I continually presented myself and tried to get her to understand and try to mollify her and so forth and so on, all of that, what would it have accomplished? It was easier for me to try and do that, because on a desire to receive for oneself alone, I didn't want to lose the relationship. But what was best for her? My sister was on a level of consciousness, not in Kabbalah at all. Her level of consciousness was verbalized by her in the following sentence. She had once said to me that I don't react to people. I suppress, I don't respond to people until I can no longer hold it in, and then I have to explode. That was her level of consciousness. Had I pushed her by trying to be close to her, by trying to have her understand me, she wouldn't have pushed me away. She wouldn't have blown up until she would had had enough. But she also wouldn't have learned. I pulled away. I said, fine, this is what you want to do. This is what we will do. And I pulled away. And 5 years, 7 years later, she passed away from lung cancer. But we reconciled before that she passed. And in the reconciling of it, she came to understand my values. She didn't agree with them even at that moment. At the end, she still didn't agree. Doesn't mean that I was right, she was wrong. It doesn't mean that she was right and I was wrong. We were just coming from two different perspectives. What is your consciousness? If you can inject this question, what is the best thing that can happen for the other person? You're going to be doing sharing. You're going to go out of your comfort zone because you're not thinking about yourself. That's the tool to use. Clear?
Yep.
Connie, do you have any other questions? Okay. I don't know which subject to talk about tonight. I can do one of two subjects. One is the Shabbat, and one is called relativity. Relativity is a hard subject to understand, but it's really an important subject. And Shabbat is a very important subject.
Let's do relativity. I know more about Shabbat than I know about relativity. That's my vote. What about you, Connie?
It doesn't matter to me.
I just want to raise a question. Connie, you tried to reach me.
Connie, are you going to go with me on Saturday this week to Kabbalah?
Oh, yes. Yay.
Okay, so we're going to talk about relativity. We've grown up in the 20th century. We've been inundated with Professor Einstein's theory of relativity, whether it's the specific theory or the general theory. What people don't understand, and people find this offensive to hear, there has never been a scientific advancement on any level that is not first revealed by one of the sages of the Kabbalah. Rabbi Ashlag wrote the theory of relativity in 1903. 1905, Albert Einstein published the specific theory of relativity, and then in 1915, the general theory of relativity. Why did Albert Einstein receive that merit to be able to publish it and become famous? It was part of his tikkun. It was part of his process. Why did Rabbi Ashlag reveal this amazing theory of relativity? What is the theory of relativity? Ultimately, the theory of relativity is that there's nothing in cement. You have to speak about something relative to something else. What Rabbi Ashlag actually wrote was talking about the tree of life. He was talking about the Sefirot. Tiferet is the middle Sefirot. Is Tiferet receiving or sharing?
You're asking us?
Yes.
Tiferet is central column.
Yes, it's central column. Does it receive or does it share?
It's balanced.
Yes.
Sharing.
Does it receive or does it share?
Does both.
When? What's the cause and what's the effect? This is what Rabbi Ashlag taught. That Tiferet, relative to Chesed and relative to Gevurah, receives. Because they are above him in the tree of life. And Tiferet, relative to Netzach and relative to Hod, shares. Because it is above them in the tree of life. If Tiferet is both receiving and sharing at the same instant, then it's a channel. And it's neither receiving nor sharing, it's just a pipe. This is the theory of relativity that Rabbi Ashlag expressed. And essentially he said, everything is relative. There is no such thing as permanency. It's always relative to what your frame of reference is talking about. So as an example, when I said to you, is Tiferet sharing or is it receiving? Your question should have been, which Tiferet? Tiferet in Gevurah, Tiferet in Chesed. Tiferet in Netzach, Tiferet in Hod. The overall frame of reference dealing with the world, with the Olam Asiyah, or the frame of reference dealing with Hanok's DNA. Because even DNA has to do with the tree of life. Everything in the world is described and influenced and the effect of the tree of life. Now, we don't see all of that. We don't look at the tree on the street, the physical tree on the street, and see the four phases in it yet. We don't look at the Tree of Life and see the Sephirot yet. But that's what Rabbi Ashlag, the level of consciousness he had received, that he had reached. And that's what he was describing. But understanding relativity helps you in your discussion that we just had about sharing and receiving, oneself alone. All of that discussion is more clearly understood if we recognize we have to describe it in a relative sense. And that's why the tool that I hand to you, that I handed to you, are you thinking about the what's best for the other person? That creates a frame of reference that makes sure that they're, that you're sharing and not receiving. Relativity is a tool. Relativity comes from recognizing that the consciousness of the person outside of the tree, outside of an event, the consciousness of that person observing the event interacts with the event and changes it. This is where modern physics has gotten. They're approaching this discussion. This is what the tool of relativity that Rabbi Ashlag gave us. Everything is relative to what you're referring to. What's your frame of reference? What are you talking about? If you don't utilize it, in what way am I talking about relative? You have a new idea to start a new business. It's very exciting. What day did you get that thought? Was it Shabbat? Was it Monday? The thought is relative to the time. The thought is relative to the actions you did that day. Why did you receive that thought then and not the day before or the day after? If you constantly question what's the frame of reference, you constantly evaluate, what is this teaching me? In what way can I be sharing? In what way do I need to receive? In what way can I transform myself? If you're asking these questions, you're talking about relativity. And you're using the tool of relativity to achieve your transformation. Every human being will become a tzaddik. What's the difference between you today and you after Mashiach? Today you're not a tzaddik. After Mashiach, you are a tzaddik. Can you bring that level of consciousness of you as a tzaddik into the now? That's relativity. You can borrow from the righteous, yourself as righteous. Borrow that energy from yourself. You don't ever have to pay it back, although you will pay it back because it's the process of becoming a tzaddik. You pay it back. But borrow that energy of the tzaddik, of the perfection, into your life now. Recognize that you are borrowing that energy relative to where you are now. from where you will end up. This is an amazing tool that you can use all the time. You're run down, you're tired, you're not able to cope. You've reached your wit's ends. You've lost patience. Reach out to yourself as the Sadekut or the Sadiq and bring that energy into yourself now. And continue on relative to where you are going. What is the goal? The goal is to remove bread of shame. How do you remove bread of shame? And there's only one way. You remove bread of shame by doing restriction. You remove bread of shame by transforming desire to receive for oneself alone into desire to receive in order to share. Transform that consciousness. What is a sadiq or a sadekut? That person who is constantly sharing and not concerned with themselves. Rabbi Ashlag, in his one of his essays, speaks very clearly about it takes a certain number of people, of souls, to be called a nation, and that amount is 600,000 people, men, because a man and a woman is still one person. So it takes 600,000 people to be a nation. And it takes this level of size to assure that all of the needs of all 600,000 people is being taken care of by all of the other 600,000. Therefore, no person needs to be concerned with themselves. Where am I going to live tonight? What am I going to eat now that I'm hungry? Where am I going to earn my living? All these questions that in our society are paramount, are important, are not important in a nation. If the nation has reached that level of consciousness where they realize, hey, there's enough of us to be concerned about Hanoch. Hanoch doesn't have to be concerned about Hanoch. He can be concerned about somebody else. He can go make sure that so-and-so has a place to sleep tonight. He doesn't have to worry about himself tonight. He only has to worry about the other person. And if he worries about himself, he is breaking the condition of the nation. And the system breaks down and doesn't work. Who is Hanoch relative to Marcia, relative to Connie? I'm a different desire to receive. Is my consciousness greater or less than yours? Doesn't matter, does it? You have a desire to receive. My consciousness is to fulfill your desire to receive. As long as I am concerned with fulfilling your desires to receive, I am doing my part of the nation's work. The minute I start thinking about myself, I have broken down the nation's work. It will not work. Eventually, there'll come a point where someone will say, he's not thinking about me, and I'm not getting fulfilled with what I want, so I better go back and make myself busy with what I want. Understanding relativity. that everything is relative. We have the metaphor of the fish tank with all the different colored glass. You've heard me say it before. What's the truth? Is the fish green, red, yellow, or brown? It depends on the glass that the person is looking through. The person looking through the green glass sees the fish as green. And truth for him is green. But is truth for the person looking through the yellow glass green? No, for him it's yellow. Well, how can truth be relative? On which side of the fish tank you're on? Yet, is there a truth? Is there one central truth? Of course there is. The fish is silver. All you have to do is be above the tank and look down through no glass, and you see its root color. It's silver. Or gold, if it's a goldfish. But each person on each side has his own truth. Is his truth any better than my truth? His truth is just as real to him as my truth is to me. And therefore, his truth is as valid as my truth is. And I need to respect his truth. I need to make room in my worldview for his truth. I need to reconcile his truth and my truth. I need to unify it. How do I do that? By recognizing his truth is relative to him, while my truth is relative to me. Relativity needs to be always part of our consciousness. Otherwise, we can get into a pattern of behavior that says, I'm right. And what does that pattern of behavior lead to? Wars, coercion, power struggles. If I'm right, he must be wrong. If I'm right, relative to him, he's right relative to him. How can I coerce him into seeing the world the way I want it to be seen? How can I learn to love my neighbor as myself if I don't recognize that my neighbor is something relative to himself and relative to me? If I don't accept and integrate this consciousness of relativity, I'm never going to grow to a point where I can love my neighbor as myself. If I hold up my hand and we have five, I'm looking for how to, there it is. If I hold up my hand, we have five fingers, four fingers and a thumb. There's an atom in each finger. What's the difference between one atom and the next? The consciousness. The consciousness of the atom in my little finger and the consciousness of the atom in my first finger. They're relative to each other, but they're also part of one hand. All three thoughts. I'm a first finger, I'm a little finger, and I'm a hand. All three thoughts are relative to each other. They're all correct. There is a little finger, there is a first finger, and there is a hand. How can you have three truths describing the same man, the same Adam? How can you have three truths describing the consciousness of the Adam? The Adam's going about doing its work. It's part of this one hand. It's part of this one body. I have to recognize that this Adam is relative. The consciousness of this Adam is relative. And I have to make room in my worldview for this concept of relativity. I listened to Rabbi Berg, all 608 tapes, explain the first five sections of the Ten Luminous Emanations. And during this process, he studied writings of the current physicists. He found it interesting, or it was part of his worldview, or whatever the reason was. But it was very clear to people after a few months, he would reveal something in the Ten Luminous Emanations, and then the physicists would publish a paper that described it. The M theory, the string theory, all of these theories were being developed at the time he was giving these sessions. Why did it happen? The Kabbalist must reveal the truth of the spiritual system in order for the physical world to have its relative law revealed to itself. What's cause and what's effect? What is our job? To go out and change the world, or to change ourselves? It's a rhetorical question, but it must be answered every day. What are you accomplishing today? What work are you doing that is right for you and for the world? Yes, you're helping your patients. Yes, you're teaching, Connie. Are you changing yourself in that process? Every day you pray, what is the purpose of prayer? It's not to receive beneficence of God. You're going to get that anyway. What is prayer for? It's me telling God he doesn't have the world right because he hasn't given me the $3 trillion that I want. If God was running the world properly, I'd have it in my pocket already. Well, actually, I wouldn't handle the $3 trillion too well, and God knows that, so he doesn't give it to me. So he's running the world absolutely perfectly. Relative to what? Relative to all of our desires to receive. It is a very difficult thing to understand relativity as a tool. But without understanding relativity, you will always be confused by how you perceive cause and effect. Does anybody have any questions?
No. Seems like it's all relative to me.
It is all relative.
We were cousins.
It is all relative.
Try to imagine what it would be like when it works the way they're describing, you know, where everybody is just doing that. It almost seems incomprehensible. I mean, I kind of get it, but I try to imagine what that would be like, and it'd be interesting.
We live in a capitalistic system. Capitalistic system tells us that communism is absolutely false, absolutely wrong, totally abhorrent. I grew up believing that, learning that. And then I came to study Kabbalah and the writings of Rabbi Ashlag, who's a Zionist, who is a communist, except for one thing. What's wrong with communism? Why didn't communism work in Russia?
It was forced.
It was not forced. Why didn't it work? Yes, it was forced in the sense that the land was absorbed and people resisted it. But then those people found work. They went back. They took from the society to the extent that they needed. And they gave to the society to the extent that they could. And that is communism. That is Marxism in its purest form. What's wrong with communism in Russia? Why didn't it work? And it is a one-word answer. Communism did not allow for God. They never accepted that there was something outside of them, relative to them, that provided for them. And they took control. And they brought in power structures. And they curried favor politically and all of the other things that if we ever analyze the Russian system, it didn't work. Because they didn't allow for the concept of God. They felt threatened by the concept of God. Religion is the opiate of the masses, etc., etc. Well, religion is not a very beneficial thing, as we have talked about in different classes. Kabbalah is not a religion. Rabbi Ashlag is saying, relative to all systems, the system that works is the one where others take care of each other and do not concern themselves with taking care of themselves. That is the system that works the best. Now you want me to go out into politics and publish that statement? I'll be thrown out. I'll be assassinated. But that ultimately is what has to be revealed. That is ultimately what Kabbalah is teaching us. When I think about someone else, what's best for that person? That's when the system is working. There has to be sufficient number of people thinking about other people, taking care of other people, to make the system work. Look around the society, and we all know we have problems in this society. We didn't have a war. We had no reason for a war. We had won the Cold War. So what had to happen? We had to have a war in Iraq. We had to have a war in Afghanistan. We had to have a war in Libya. We had to have a war in Yemen. Where is that coming from? People who did not lose their consciousness of they're in power and people need to do what they say. How can I change that? Not by going out and becoming active in politics. I can change it by changing myself, by thinking about the person next to me, my neighbor. What do they need? What will make them happier? What will fulfill them more? Don't I have to worry about what my needs are? The answer is no. It's all relative when we come to understand relativity. When we come to understand that my neighbor is only that atom in my little finger relative to me being the atom in the first finger. Relative to me and it being the atom in the hand. Any other questions?
Well, it seems to have worked on kibbutz and moshavs.
Except that the all of the kibbutzim went broke in the 70s. They're all broke today. They owe the people in their on an economic accounting level. They're all broke. They'll never see the money. The banks.
So it didn't work?
It didn't work. Because again.
Why?
There was no room for God. The religious kibbutzim are 1 in 100. And there's no room for a person of a different orientation of their religion. There's no room. If you're not a Breslover, if you're not a Chabadnik, you can't, you know, you can be in the Chabad religious kibbutz, but not in the Breslov kibbutz. There's no room for anybody different than me. Because then I won't have any conflict. If everybody is the same, then we're all right. And our truth is clear and pure. Of course, corrupted, because there's not a real truth without observing the other person's truth. Relative to each other. The Breslovers have truth. The Chabadniks have truth. The modern Orthodox have truth. The Reform has truth. Where are you open to truth? I have a student who teaches what he calls Tantric Kabbalah. He was a medical doctor who became a pediatrician. He had been sexually abused as a child, and he was oriented to he had an attraction to women's breasts. that are very, very different than most men. And he teaches today. What he did was there was a baby who couldn't suck the mother's breast milk. And his suggestion was, after observing what was going on, the baby got tired trying to suck. It couldn't suck strong enough to draw the flow. So he suggested to the wife, the mother, and her husband that he be allowed to bring the milk so that the baby would be able to get it. And that's how this mother became able to breastfeed. And he did this with two or three women, I'm not sure. And he lost his medical license over that because society and medical practice says that's not appropriate. Was he wrong? He spent a couple of years in jail contemplating what he was to learn, understanding that he had been abused, that he didn't realize it at the time. Going through spiritual growth, the greatest thing that ever happened to him was that experience. What does he teach today? He teaches that men and women should not have mutual sexual partners. They should be free to have many partners. That is his truth. Is that the truth that as I understand it? No. Is he part of my world? Absolutely. What is the best thing for him? To become like me? Or for me to appreciate his value, knowing that it isn't applicable to me.
I get it.
Just a quick story, which you all know and heard, about Mahatma Gandhi. When the Muslim man or the Hindu man came to him and said, "I killed the Muslim man. How can I fix that?" And he was told, "Go raise a Muslim child as a Muslim to respect your religion as a Hindu and to respect his religion as a Muslim." Are we able to achieve that? Another personal story that helps me understand this relativity. A man came and broke the sliding glass door in my apartment, coming in to rob me. My roommate came out and accosted him, struggled with him, brought him to me in the synagogue, and said, "This man came to rob you. What are you going to do about it?" To make a very long story short, I took him back to the apartment. I made sure he showered and calmed down from the struggle. I had him clean up the mess, and then the two of us went out to lunch, where I discussed Kabbalah and how it could help him in his life and avoid making these decisions that he was making. Did I understand where he was coming from? Did I understand that his need was an addiction for drugs and that's why he was doing this? We live in a society that is very, very difficult because it thinks it's right. And the truth is, everybody is right. except when they're wrong. And the only person who can determine that they're being wrong is that person themselves. And that's why the spiritual system works the way it does. The words out of our mouth judging other people are the words that are used to judge ourselves. Because only judgments must be relative to me. And the only way they're going to be relative to me is if they're my words. Any other questions?
No.
I will see you next week.
Okay, thank you.
Have a good
week. Thank you.
Take care, Chris. Bye-bye.